Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Mr. Sibanda, good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon, Zama. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I am blessed and highly favored. And yourself?
Fantastic, fantastic, man. I'm great and also blessed. Thank you so much for asking. We're talking customary marriages this afternoon. A topic under the South African law has been debated and considered extensively through different media. And often it has been the subject of debate on debate on television and social media platforms. Now, what is customary marriage for those who may not have followed the debate?
That is correct, Zama. This topic is quite elusive, and I think it causes quite a lot of problems for a lot of people. Customary marriage is simply defined as a marriage that is concluded in accordance with customary law. Right. And what do we mean by customary law? So customary law means the customs and usages traditionally observed among a type of indigenous people in African indigenous people within South Africa, and it forms part of their culture. Part of the culture of those people. Really, that's the definition in terms of the recognition of Customary Marriages Act. Now, what are we talking about? When we talk about customary marriages, there are two things. There's a distinction that is made between the two customary marriages. One, it's customary marriages that were entered into before 15 November 2000. Mm-hmm. This is the time when the recognition of Customary Marriages Act was enacted, and those marriages that were concluded before the 15th of November 2000. Now, prior to the commencement of the Customary Marriages Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, the requirements of customary marriages were dependent on where the parties resided. Right? There was a difference between the requirements for a valid marriage within the KwaZulu-Natal and outside the KwaZulu-Natal.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Customary marriages concluded within KwaZulu-Natal where the requirements were according to the Zulu codes.
Okay.
All right. So now, and outside KwaZulu-Natal, it was a different setup. Now, after the commencement of the recognition of Customary Marriages Act, all the marriages that were entered into after 15 November 2000 are now governed by the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act 120 of 1998.
Regardless of where one resides?
Regardless of where one resides.
Okay.
All right. Now, what is so important in this particular act is Section 3, which spells out the requirements for the validity of a customary marriage.
Okay.
Now, I'll read it out for you, Zama, so that we can break it down, because this is where most of the complications come in.
Okay.
Right. Section 3.1 reads, Section 3.1A reads, prospective spouses, must both be above the age of 18 years.
Okay.
And Roman numeral 2, must consent to be married under customary law. And B, marriage must be negotiated and entered into or celebrated in accordance with customary law. Now, this is where our problem comes in. The two requirements, Roman numeral one, Roman numeral two, they're easy to determine. I mean, if people are above the age of 18, we check their IDs and we know that, okay, they are above the age of 18. And remember, also, where a person is below the age of 18, consent can be sought from the parents of that particular person. Uh-huh. And if consent is denied, consent can be sought in terms of Section 25 of the Marriage Act from the minister or for the marriage to go on. So the fact that the person is below the age of 18 is no barrier the person to go and get married.
Okay.
Right. Now, this is where our problem starts in B, Section 3.1b. Which states that the marriage must be negotiated and entered into or celebrated in accordance with customary law. The negotiation, the entering into, and the celebrating differs from group to group.
Mm.
And without these, it would be very, very difficult for one to say that a customary marriage does indeed exist. And the courts are faced with the daunting task mostly of determining whether a marriage is valid under Section 3.1b. And this is the section that has proved to be quite difficult for courts. Right. The requirements in Section 3.1b can be viewed now as the legal requirements for a valid customary marriage. And this view was confirmed by the Constitutional Court in the case of M.M. versus M.N. Right. This is what the court said in that particular case. I'll read it. It says, Section 3.1b goes on to stipulate that the marriage must be negotiated and entered into or celebrated in accordance with customary law. Customary law may thus impose validity requirements in addition to those set out in sections 1A. In order to determine such requirement, a court must have regard to the customary practices of the relevant community. Now, the court must have regard, if you are Tswana, the court must have regard to the practices of the Tswana people. If you are Zulu, the court must have regard to the customary practices of the Zulu people, and so on and so forth.
Yep.
Now, the courts regard three requirements or stages in the marriage process as essential requirements for a valid customary marriage under Section 3.1b. And this is according to the case of Sila versus Masugu. It's called the Masugu case. And in this case, the court found that the process of a customary marriage is a gradual process. In other words, there are some underlying components of a customary marriage that are involved, which may include family participation, the lobola agreement, and the integration of the bride into the husband's family. Courts have had to interpret Section 3.1b, you know, to determine the validity of a marriage in various cases. There's been a plethora of litigation, especially during a situation where a divorce is imminent, or one of the parties to the marriage has become deceased. Now, in Mutsuatsua versus Roro, or is it Hoho?
Roro.
Yes, the court was of the view that a customary marriage in true African tradition is not an event, but it is a process that comprises a chain of events.
Okay.
Further, it is not about the bride and the groom. It involves the two families. The basic formalities which lead to a customary marriage are That one, emissaries are sent by the man's family to the woman's family to indicate the interest in the possible marriage. This, of course, presupposes that the two parties, the man and the woman, have agreed to marry each other. And then the second part is that a meeting of the parties' relatives will be convened, where lobola is negotiated, and the negotiated lobola or part thereof is handed over to the woman's family, or the two families will then agree on the formalities and date on which the woman will then be handed over to the man's family, which handing over may include but not necessarily be accompanied by a celebration. So this was the finding in the case of Motsuatsuwa.
Okay.
Right. So the integration of the bride into the husband's family, or we call it colloquially, it's the handing over of the bride. This is regarded as the final stage of the marriage process. And without that, no valid marriage can come into being. Right. The Supreme Court has had to make determinations in that. In other words, it confirmed that the integration of the bride is the final final stage. The Supreme Court does agree that the bride needs to be handed over or integrated into the family of the groom. This was found in the case of Murupane versus Southon. And here the court held that, I will read again, the handing over of the Makoti to her in-laws is the most crucial part of a customary marriage. This is so as it is through the this symbolic customary practice that the Makoti is finally welcomed and integrated into the groom's family, which henceforth becomes her new family. Right. However, look, the courts have often grappled with the question of whether the bride was indeed handed over, was indeed incorporated into the husband's family. And this has plagued courts in quite a number of cases, one of the cases being the case of Mkebe versus the Minister of Home Affairs. So even though the Supreme Court of Appeals confirmed that the integration of the bride is the final stage of the process of the conclusion of a customary marriage, the case of Mkebe finds that the parties can do away with the integration of the bride by agreement. The question then arises whether the parties can indeed waive or condone the essential requirements of a customary marriage through agreement. So this is what the court had to answer. Can the parties, by agreement, say, yes, we see the requirement of the handing over of the bride, but we are willing to waive this? So this is what the court had to answer. Now, I'll briefly go into the facts of the case. Right. The facts of the case are that the plaintiff, who was the husband of the deceased, and he was a Swati man, he sought a declaratory order that the marriage between himself and the deceased be declared a valid marriage. The deceased, who was a Tsonga-speaking lady, in this case, the family of the deceased opposed this application by the plaintiff in this case. And this application was opposed by the elder brother of the deceased. Though the parties agreed that lobola was negotiated and it was partially delivered, there were a couple of arguments that the plaintiff in this case tendered towards the court. So one of the arguments, the first argument that the plaintiff indicated, was that he and the deceased had never planned to celebrate their marriage or to hand over or integrate the bride to the family, because in that case, in any event, they were already living together at the time that they entered into the customary marriage. He testified that they had considered themselves married without the deceased having been handed over by the by the family, and that no one from the deceased family requested him to perform any further customs of or to finalize the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
He also testified that he had no knowledge of the Tsonga tradition.
Mm.
And because he was Swati, and nobody came forward to say that this is according to the Tsonga tradition, this is what you must do. And also the issue of the fact that there was part payment of the lobola, nobody came forward to him and said that as long as there's part payment, then the issue of the customary marriage is still outstanding, because according to his culture, in the Swati culture, a part payment would have been allowed, and the marriage would have gone on. The son of the deceased in that particular case was also opposed to the marriage being declared a valid marriage. And here, he argued that the payment of the lobola was not sufficient, and it could not conclude a valid customary marriage. It was merely to create the bond between the two families. The brother, who was the person who opposed this particular application, he argued that during the lobola negotiation process, they had agreed that the lobola would have to be delivered in full before the deceased would be handed over to the plaintiff's family. And this never happened. You can see from the arguments of the plaintiff that these are common arguments. These are very common arguments that come up, especially when one of the parties is deceased. Now, this particular problem was faced by one of the most popular cases, which is the Tsambo versus Sinkhadi case, which is the double HP case, right? In this case, the court had to decide on an ancillary issue of whether, pursuant to the conclusion of the lobola negotiation, a handing over of the bride ensued to the satisfaction of the requirements of the marriage in terms of Section 3.1b, according to customary law. The appeal was directed at the decision of the Gauteng Division of the High Court in Johannesburg, where Mo Gautleng J, who is currently the judge dealing with the Senzo Meiwa case, he had found that the marriage between the deceased, which is Double HP, and Sinkhadi, had been concluded, had been validly concluded. And the appellant in that case was Mr. Robert Tsambo, who is the biological father of the deceased. Ms. Sinkhadi relied on particular issues in support of her particular of her case. One of the issues that she relied on was that the deceased had proposed marriage on or around about November 2015 in Amsterdam, and she immediately accepted that marriage proposal. On January 2016, the appellant dispatched a letter written by the deceased, and they sort of they advanced their interest to marrying Sinkhadi. On 28 February 2016, the families met, and this is where the lobola negotiations had were concluded. The agreement between them was reduced to writing, and it was signed. At the conclusion of the lobola negotiations, the women from the respective families attended to the preparation of meals. And the deceased changed his attire to a formal attire. The respondent in this case, which is Ms. Sinkhadi, was asked by the family of the deceased to change into an attire that was similar to that of the deceased. The celebration that ensued after the lobola negotiations was recorded, and it was on video, as well as photographs that were taken. And later that day, the deceased and the respondent went back to the house where they were staying, and they continued to live together as husband and wife. However, Mr. Tsambo, in this case, was of the view that on that particular day, during the Lobola negotiation, the events that occurred on that particular day were confined to the Lobola negotiation, and the celebration that occurred was a celebration of the successful conclusion of the Lobola negotiation. However, the court didn't agree with this, and they said the court found that the handing over at that time was not a strict requirement for a valid marriage and could be waived. On appeal, however, the court was of the view that there was no basis for the High Court to have declared that the handing over of the bride was not a strict requirement. In other words, it is an essential requirement for the validity of a marriage. So the essential requirements of a customary marriage cannot be waived or cannot be condoned by the parties. But the accompanying rituals can be waived. I mean, in other words, the celebration and all that stuff can be waived. Parties who are concluding a marriage must always keep in mind that the rituals are performed to provide proof that a valid marriage has come into being in the event that such proof is needed, for instance, during a divorce or after the death of the parties. So...
I just wanted to say, you know what, it's a mouthful and our time is completely far spent. We are literally over time by a good 5 minutes. I wish I could actually engage on a number of issues that you raised here, but our time is over. Let's see if we can actually conclude this or perhaps continue rather with this in the next segment, I think sometime next week.
Next would be fine. I'm happy to continue with this next week. Look, the topic is quite
it's extensive, eh?
Contested. It's quite contested.
I think we should lay it here because I wanted to actually check which law does the court then use to actually administer the traditional part of our marriages, and also if a party didn't know that this was required, would we then not say ignorance of the law is no excuse, and a number of other things that you raised, but I suppose we can always engage those next week.
Thank you Zama.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.